Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here. I'm so pumped to have another fireside chat with one of the speakers at Digital Built Week, where we're the official media partner and podcast coming up in Seattle. And today we have Scott Miatich, who is a senior design engineer at GLY Construction out of Bellevue, Washington. We're going to go through and we're going to learn about his story and his company at GLY Construction. And what we're going to be talking about and discussing is that he has been living the world of 3D scanning. So I'm going to have him walk us through the evolution of 3D scanning. We're going to have him give us an overview of how the implementation and extraction process with devices and software work with 3D scanning. I want him to talk to us about how he's using this day in, day out. So talk about how we can compile and extract that point cloud data and best practice as how to distribute, understand, and utilize the data obtained from this. And maybe have some time for some case studies and going to have a lot of fun. This is going to be around his presentation that he's going to be doing at Digital Built Week titled Laser Scanning for Design and Construction. So for you, Art of Construction Tribe, the main message for you is to help better understand laser scanning technology and how is this going to benefit us. The sophisticated process is capable of producing more comprehensive solutions to modern obstacles with unprecedented efficiencies. Let's go have and talk all about lasers and scanning and all kinds of cool stuff here with Scott Miatich. Lock and load, tribe. What's your favorite beverage?
Beer. It's easy for me to say.
All right. So you're in Washington, right? Right outside of Seattle?
That's correct.
And there's a lot of cool beers up there. What's one local one that comes to mind?
There's so many to choose from. But right now I'm probably enjoying Georgetown Brewery and some Bodie. Not a bad beer choice. An IPA.
Cool. What's the favorite place you've traveled?
There's a lot of them out there, but probably when I was younger is Belize in Central America, and then now to get my fix helicopter skiing up in Alaska.
Wow. Give us one story from that.
So I'd say probably from skiing Alaska, I get up there, you show up, and you just kind of jump in a helicopter. They do something called a tow-in. They just land the helicopter right up in the side of the mountain. You jump out, it flies away, and all of a sudden you're wondering what in the world you're doing up there. But then you just point and go and enjoy some of the best runs of your life.
Wow, I'm jealous of that, man. So what's your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction arena, as we passionately call the AOC?
Well, obviously, probably just get figured out. Skiing is one of my biggest passions, my biggest stress release I can find. But now I have three young children, so I'm really finding enjoyment in sharing the outdoors with them and teaching them about the different ways of how to sustain and keep Mother Nature protected so that you can enjoy the future to come.
Cool stuff, my man. Well, we got to know a little bit about Scott. What's your story and what led you to be in all about the laser scanning and all these cool new tools at GLY Construction?
So I guess my story started many years ago when actually I got into architecture. I was in that industry for, I guess, over 12 years or so. And then one day, a construction company just came out, the one I'm working for right now, GLY, reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to come over. A lot of people in the architecture said I was going to the dark side. I don't necessarily know that. It's been fun. I'm visual, so it really helps with that. But my life has taken me all around the world, so I've seen all different experiences. And one thing that's for true is we communicate through pictures, and if you work together as a team and everything like that, no matter what your discrepancies are or whatever you have for visual or language barriers or anything like that, you can get through it if you just go at it a unique, different way and approach it as best as you can. So it's been a fun experience. I've gotten to see a lot of big projects, little projects, and everything like that along the way.
Awesome. So your international experience has led you to being the design engineer for GLY Construction, and you're really versed on using all the different AutoCAD and Revit and Photoshop and all those different tools. Is that kind of a quick synopsis of of Scott?
Yeah, that's a great way to say it. They like to call me the liaison with the architects out there. So I can guess speak the language.
So tell us about GOY.
So GOY is rooted up in the Pacific Northwest. The culture is about innovation, creativity, and just family. They've been around for over 50 years, I believe, since 2017 is when we celebrate our 50th anniversary. So we do all kinds of projects, all mostly local in Seattle, I'd say. Actually, all of them would be in this region. They range from commercial to mixed use to residential to all over the gamut, healthcare. So we got a lot of experience all over the place. I mean, it's all about the teams and then the integrated approaches that we use to get to the project's completion. It's all about forming that team and then getting to the project end together and trying to avoid that iron triangle of problems that often exist out there.
And I love on the website, we're always talking about beginning with the end in mind and working right to left and all about collaboration for your clients. And I know that really resonates with you about communication. And it's kind of, they break it down into three parts of managing complexity, creating values, and mitigating risk. And so that really resonated me when I kind of did the research on your company. So let's go down a journey and talk through laser scanning. What do you say, Scott?
Sounds great.
So can you help our listening audience talk through and kind of, you've been at this for a while. Can you kind of give us the evolution of laser scanning? Because I'm found, you know, there's so many people that feel like they're just learning and this is like a new thing, but correct me if I'm wrong, this has been around for a while, right?
It has been around for a while. I guess the earliest advent of it, you could probably see in the 60s, but it didn't really break out into engineering construction until probably the 90s or so. And it all started with, I think I pronounced it correctly, with Cyro Technologies, and that was around 1993-ish. And that's when they first introduced it to scanners for survey engineers. Around 2001 is whenever Leica purchased Cyro. And they improved upon that technology. Now, the original stuff that Cyro was creating was pretty huge and clunky, so it was kind of limited, and it also had this 40-degree field of views. Now, with present day, not just size is going down, but technology is advancing, the software is getting better, and how it gets recognized and transferred over. So, excuse me, we're looking at a lot more increased efficiencies, the quality enhancements growing, the risk management, the race and reduction is just getting better. And then ultimately with how we're doing with these coordinated efforts with design teams and contractors, the integration with BIM technologies is just growing immensely. So in the end, all of this technology and how we use it is just about minimizing the risk and increasing the transparencies amongst the team. And this program and the software and all this technology that's behind all this laser scanning is a really good example of how everyone can be successful in these modern day obstacles that we have with a really increased amount of efficiency along the way.
What a great explanation. So it's kind of like, it's been around since the 60s, but it was really kind of clunky and hard to use, where they've just refined this to the point where it's super fast and efficient. And now several of the different segments are adopting this. So the handoff can be, that information can be passed around. Is that kind of a cool synopsis of that?
Yeah. It's just like with anything with time, it's just getting better.
So next, I was curious if you could kind of give us an overview of how the implementation and the extraction process with these devices and how the software works with the reality capture technology.
So primarily, there's four processes in this whole thing, and it can simply be said that it's a scan, a registration, the point cloud, and then the actual import and export process, the model. So whenever you're looking at it and you're doing the process of it, when you start doing the scan, you're really creating it. So you're going out there with a device, and it vary in size and complexity, but simplest terms, you're just going out there, the really fancy camera, and it takes a bunch of laser scans. So it's, we're looking at the real world context. And then you take that data that you have and you're taking it as still members, but they're usually spherical photos, 3D in nature. And then it's you have to take them and stitch them together. This is called the import or registration process. A lot of that's out there by different programs and everything like that. But how it comes all together is can be either automatic or manual. It defines where the targets are that you'd set, and it stitches it all together, just like a blanket or a anything like that you have to put together and connect a movie, I guess, and how you stitch together at the end. And then you take this point cloud, it's called, another term would be called indexing, and you're taking this information from the scans that you just created, and you're creating something that somebody can navigate or fly in, and you can kind of clean it up. That point cloud also allows it to be measured and annotated and marked up. But then ultimately, you've got to get this out to the end user, and you have to export it and then import it. So the export is you find out what kind of format you have and for files, and then you send and receive that, primarily in the send part. You send it out, the end user gets it, and they bring it into whatever type of program they use in the BIM software nowadays. So it's a simple process, but in the long-term things, it's not a big red easy button out there, but it's a process.
Great explanation. So can you discuss from a high level how to compile these extracted point cloud data that now you've pulled out there?
Yeah, so now we have all this data, and it's always that big mystery question of what do I do with this all now, or how do I get it, how do I get to work? And I guess the easiest question to their answer to that is there's actually several manufacturers out there that exist for laser scanning. Each manufacturer has its own proprietary software that they use and the registration process. So I can't say there's one way or the other. We obviously use some programs over others, and we have our techniques that we like to use, but globally, there's a registration software that you use to take all this information. The good news about all this is most of the major CAD and BIM software developers out there have a compatibility with these point cloud files that makes it a little bit easier to import into their system. So the actual import process is getting a little bit easier over time. I like to use a program by Autodesk called Recap. It's pretty simple. I will note that it also does registration, but we like to use the manufacturer's registration software. This Recap software is really slick in the way that it also has a pro, but also a free viewer. So you can, if somebody has enough hardware and information, they can always go out there, download this program, bring it up on their screen and look at it similar to what I would. And it's just another one of those viewers, almost like how PDF a long time ago came out with the Adobe and Bluebeam and all that stuff. So it's a process. But then other tools that we've definitely found in this that work really well is Revit and Navisworks. I'd say Revit is primarily the one that the design world's looking for. So when they're looking for a scan from us that they want to receive and then look at and compare against their information, Revit has been probably the go-to for that. And Autodesk has Revit and Navisworks. With Navisworks, either one of them has a pretty simple import tool that allows you to go. One thing I would stress though with that is project coordinates and datums is imperative to success. Having that information up front and amongst the team will make that import process that much simpler and easier.
You know your stuff, my man.
I like to. I like to think I do. At least in architecture school, they gave me a good brochure on if you don't know the answer, a good way to fake it. So
oh yeah, that was really insightful. So can you since you've been using this both in the architecture world and now in the contracting world, can you give us some best practices on how you distribute and understand and utilize the data obtained?
Sure. I guess first and foremost, what is important? What level of clarity do you need? Chances are that you want everything out there possible, but maybe you can narrow it down to a certain area that you know is a clear and absolute deliverable that everyone can agree to. These projects can be huge. These scans can even be bigger. So the hardware that we have to use to transfer this and receive this information and then process it, look at it, and all that is very demanding. So it all depends on who the end user is going to be and what the end example or end product wants to be that you share. So it kind of goes along a process. And when you meet as a team, you're going to come up with these ideas of what that final outcome would be, and you want to put it together so you both know what the outcome is going to be and what you're both looking for. That kind of determines how we register it, how we go through the process, and then how we hand it over at the end. Really good example too is just like how you want to transfer this data. Nowadays, these file sizes are growing. Theoretically, in years to come, they're shrinking size, just like how CAD files did at one point, or photos that you used to take with your camera. Now, these iPhones nowadays have unbelievable renderings and pictures that you can take with them, but they're in a manageable size. Old days, it weren't like that. So I can see scanning and everything that come that way too. So do you use a physical hard drive that you physically hand back and forth between them? Or do you find some of these online transfer sites that you exchange information on? Long-term, you got to figure out where your storage is and how you're going to hold on to these information, but then also how you can transfer it. So I know personally, whenever we go out, that would be more of the team approach and how you're looking at it and how you're trying to determine what the end result is. But for us, we like to do a few pre-flight is what I'd call it, or even on-site checklists. So when we're getting into the pre-flight, what we're trying to do and we're trying to determine with the team is that we're just confirming the scan location, but we're also trying to figure out the date and time and making sure that we have all the access rights. So a lot of times you're going into these highly sensitive or limited areas where you can only get permissions at certain times of the day or by certain people, or you have to have certain clearances. So knowing all that stuff up front and who you have to be in contact with or who's going to be the one meet and greeting you is very important to know. And if that doesn't happen, you almost want to have a plan B in the back, your back pocket, just in case, so you can still try to do the work at hand. And probably that process, you've already defined, hopefully, that critical scan areas. So your prerequisites of what has to happen. And then on top of that, you're going to develop a matrix that outlines the scan team's responsibilities and the scope of work and allows for tracking. Some of those other prerequisites might include the overhead systems and columns, exterior. A great example is we recently had to go into a hospital, into a surgery, to a surgical room, I think is the correct term of it. But they had, you can really imagine with HEPA and all that stuff, all they have to do to be able to get into these areas and the special suits they had to wear. So knowing that ahead of time was key. Then refining the extents of the scan and the prerequisites, and then, like I mentioned before, defining a common point or the datum or the location of where these scans get inserted to would be really important. So that's a pre-flight. Once we get on site, we kind of walk it again to make sure that we see all the area in front of us and we're aware of all the environmental features that might be going on. It could be weather, it could be interior, exterior, it all depends. So it's just another step of the process. Of course, you've already acquired the permissions. But then you're also going to be checking your equipment, making sure it all works. Hopefully you did that before you got there, but making sure everything's in place, having extra batteries, having extra things set up aside, just if the what if happens is always important. And then whenever you're setting up the scanner, you also have to understand with some of these scanners, there's these spheres that you have to set up for, specifically the ones that we use that helps with stitching the whole thing together. These would be what we call targets and I guess the layout term. And you have to know the distances. Like you can only go so far with certain spheres. I think the max would be up to around 120 feet. We recommend maybe around 60 feet or even going up to 50 feet. So just so you can do manageable spaces. So just a few examples of some of the things we've gone through and have proven to work out for us over time.
Yeah, that's some great stuff that you're kind of talking through with us of like the actual important stuff when you get into this. And, you know, we talk about working right to left or beginning with the end in mind. All this stuff is so important to the checks and balances. And you have to know enough about these new tools to know what their strengths and limitations are. And this is really key stuff that he's, bullet pointing out for us. So thanks for that information. So do you have a little time to give us a few case studies as you've been living this and maybe talk through and how you're utilizing virtual and augmented realities with reality capture technologies? And what would be really helpful, I believe, for the Art of Construction tribe is that you can talk through the construction and the design phase kind of because you're doing both, where it seems like a lot of people are doing the handoff and they don't quite know one side or the other. So do you have any projects you could talk through that way?
Sure. I probably have a handful and a bag full of them, but I'll try to limit for the sake of time. But I know even just prime examples of just personal ones that I've just recently used it for. A good example is I was on a shell and core project. On that project, I happened to be responsible for all the structure on it. So what we use the scan tool for is almost a QA/QC process. When I would go out with my engineer record, would walk a deck, would take a look at it, make sure everything's in the right location, make sure the structure's as per design before we physically have concrete hit the deck and make it all locked in place. So it'd be hard and gray soon. not as much fun to modify after that all occurs. So what we do is we come out to these scans and would not only be checking our formwork to make sure all level and in place, but we looking at it for embeds, sleeves, penetrations, and making sure all those are in the right location. In the very beginning, it was a very valuable tool. We found out right away because a small little sleeve or electrical conduit that was supposed to be put in a wall might have been shifted in one direction or the other, not intentionally or anything like that, but just a layout scenario that just occurred that had to be cleaned up. So we were able to let them know ahead of time to shift that piece of element 1 inch, 2 inches in one direction or the other, so it would land in that wall for future, saving time and problems and everything like that. So it was really great for that. Then I learned later on in that shell and core process that accidents do happen, and maybe this deck that I happened to be on was a PT. So the post-tension cables, one of them got penetrated. So that means that it relieves the stress and it's now no longer a live cable. So I have to present this information to my structural engineer to show them what it all looks like. I was able to pull up my scan, show it to them, show all the different areas between the submittals and the scan, but also look at that actual 3D model and show them with certainty where things were at to see what the next step would be. So it gave everyone a little bit of extra level of reassurance and certainty that we were doing the correct thing. Now, sidestep into present day. Just last week, I was working on a TI side that happened to be now inside that shell and core project, and we're trying to locate a unique ornamental stair. Where it was originally supposed to be designed for, we weren't able to put it because I was able to pull up these scans and realize where all the PT was once again, and realize that the core anchor of the stair, the element that would be the primary support, was right in the middle of one of our busiest PT strands, and along with some struts and everything like that. So we were able to shift it one way or the other. Sharing that information with the design team right away was like a light bulb going off. I mean, they already knew that they had constraints, but they didn't realize exactly where they are because it's on paper, and myself being like this as well, they're visual in nature. When you show it to them and then you walk an area and you show it to them actually on site, it makes a lot more sense. So just those are two great examples of everyday work that happens that I'm probably catch myself doing multiple times a week and just sharing the information. Another good example would just be if for those people that are coming out to Seattle that would like to see a project of completeness, I guess, right now, would be at 2 Union Square. We did a lobby in that area that was a renovation, and it was some really high-end materials that got put in there. A very fancy ceiling and also a wall that I believe was a stone cladding on it. Both those elements of the ceiling and that stone cladding were very long lead items. So of course, like any project, we had a very short construction schedule and a tight budget. So we're trying to stay in line with these constraints while also delivering a project within the tolerances that are given to us without scanning that space and knowing exactly where the existing walls were and the existing materials. I don't think we would have physically been able to get this fancy, very custom ceiling installed with this tightest tolerances as we did, or the stone wall as well. So it was just a really good case study of how it was a thought and process. We're like, yeah, we can use this to try to make it work. And in the end, it really did a great job. And I guess just for people out there that see the, what's going on in the world and things that happen, I mean, there's Notre Dame recently had a fire. So they're claiming right now that because they were able to do all these scans of the Notre Dame prior to the fire, that they're going to actually be able to put it back together at an unprecedented pace. I mean, hopefully it doesn't take as long as it originally was built, but that was lots of years. So, but technology like that is just a really good example of how things are coming along and how when you share information and use information, you can get usually get to the end much faster and much cleaner fashion.
Talk about a whole new level of general contracting when you talk through the different elements of the critical path of the construction, where you as the project manager are able to come in and veer the stairs left or right and keep everybody out of jail free and still make it work, as well as the building materials you're able to plan accordingly to where it all works the first time and everybody's happy, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Awesome stuff, man. So we've been asking on all these series that we've been working with Digital Built Week of what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
That's always a fun topic. we try to push that every day. There's a lot of stuff going out there right now, and technology is changing. It's constantly evolving. Sometimes these new pieces are showing up, but then they're also fizzling out just as fast. They have great ideas. So it just depends on what the application is. For me personally, I've definitely seen a lot of advancements with the VR, AR, and XR arenas. I can see that continuing to grow, especially with wearables, like headsets, even exoskeletons. I definitely know some larger manufacturing plants in the area and stuff like that that have put exoskeletons into use, just for their own workers to protect and give them longevity. They're pretty expensive. So like anything, it's just going to be some time that comes along with that in development. Photogrammetry and the use of drones will always continue to grow. I think especially with how that's taken off in the world, I'm really definitely looking at how we can take that photogrammetry and link it in with laser scanning and how they can both relate to each other. And I wouldn't be surprised if robots took off more in the very near future.
We kind of laugh about all that stuff was so crazy, but it's just not anymore as I'm learning and seeing this stuff. But like you said, you got to make sure we're connecting the technology with the handshakes and stuff that's actually going to be mutual beneficial versus fizzle out, right?
Exactly.
Cool. So we always ask, what's that one thing for contractors and affiliates to grow their business, as this is for connecting the technology and handshakes for us all to learn and grow from it? What's that one thing you want them to think about as they move the needle forward?
Communication. It's all about the exchange of information and full transparency. We all know projects aren't necessarily getting easier. They're getting more complicated, more creative, some really exciting boundaries that we're pushing every single day. But if we can just eliminate just a small portion of risk and approach the project as a team, it would just be the project's successes get greater. Ultimately, this translates to a better team approach that builds on trust and removes those silos that are in the old days of people working against each other and kind of derailing a project that pretty quickly. I mean, in the end, it's all about demonstrating that you can work with each other or play with each other well in the sandbox and hopefully inviting a client to invite you and even the design partners or the entire team back to another project and do future work with them.
Awesome, Scott. Man, it's such a pleasure learning the different tools that you've learned. And man, talk about a value. If I'm someone doing a project, I would want GLY and Scott on my team based on the stories you're saying. And that's what we really need to be thinking about as we're looking at these different tools to move the construction needle forward. Hey, I can't wait to meet up with you at Digital Built Week in Seattle coming up soon. Best of luck to the presentation, and can't wait to meet up with you and talk more about laser scanning in the future, my man.
All right. Pleasure's all mine. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Hey, Art of Construction Tribe, I challenge you, either we're growing or dying, and we need to be growing, and we need to be having a Scott and a GLY on our team, because those case studies and lessons learned, so much value of working together and communicating in the team. So, boy, I would love to have my customers on my day-to-day window and door company be coming to us and talking about these different tools. So this is the future. Make sure you have a technology expert on your team and moving the needle forward. And laser scanning is a big deal in capturing that data. I loved how he talked through the different ways and the compromises that you need to make. But you need to understand how you're going to be using that data. That's the key thing that I took away, is if you're working right to left, is I loved his kind of pre-launch and job site visits and the different tests along the way. So if you're going to be partnering with a technology leader like Scott from GLY, make sure you take the time to maximize, because this is big data and big information that you need to use properly. Hopefully you learned some great stuff about laser scanning and crushing it out there. See you on the next one.